instead of going to a restaurant. Vasquez nodded agreement.
Don't want to be seen in public if we can avoid it. They didn't want to help me, but they've probably got the state police out looking for me.
Angelique suddenly realized they could be after us for kidnapping.
Some kid, Vasquez grumbled.
I'll go to the nearest fast food place and get us some dinner, Stoner said.
So why are they after you?
Vasquez asked as she reached for another drumstick. There's nothing wrong with her appetite, Angelique thought. For a shriveled old prune of 107, she eats like a teenager. The three of them were in the room the two women were sharing. Stoner had pulled in a chair from his own room so they could all sit around the chipped plastic table and share the meal. But Stoner hadn't touched the bucket of fried chicken, nor the coleslaw, buns, or cola. Angelique realized that she had never seen him eat anything at all. "The new morality wants me," Stoner replied to the old woman's question. Vasquez nodded as if the answer satisfied her, but then she asked,
"What for?"
Stoner smiled and countered, "Did you notice the northern lights the past few nights?"
"Northern lights?"
Slowly, as the two women ate from the plastic containers, Stoner explained who and what he was. Vasquez seemed unimpressed.
"So they think you're a nutcase, is that it?"
Stoner broke into a laugh. "Close enough," he acquiesced. "Close enough."
"What made you come with us?" Angelique asked.
Vasquez frowned.
"My regular doctor had them take me to the hospital. Young pup said my heart was going to go. So they look me over in the hospital and say I'm too old to get a replacement heart. Tree age, they called it."
"Triage," Angelique murmured.
"Whatever. All they were going to do was pray over me and wait for me to fold up. Screw that! When I go, I want it to be on my own terms."
"They allowed you to roam the hospital corridors?" Stoner asked.
"Sure. They figured an old bat like me can't get away from them. Not with security checkpoints every 100 meters and me stuck in a power chair."
"Then you latched onto us," said Angelique.
"You bet. I saw you two waltzing past the security goons, sweet as pie. No badges, no papers, no nothing. So I figured I'd tag along with you."
"With your scrapbook," Stoner said. For the first time, Vasquez looked uneasy. She glanced at the big square book where it was resting on one of the beds. She muttered,
"With my scrapbook, right?"
"May we see it?" Stoner asked as he started to get up from his chair.
"It's private," Vasquez snapped. "I'm going to send it to my great-grandniece. She's on—"
She gasped. Her eyes went wide. She clutched at her chest and collapsed in her chair. Her skin went gray, sheened with perspiration. Stoner went to her side and grasped her frail shoulder.
"She's having a heart attack," Angelique said. "We'll have to call an emergency team."
"No," said Stoner. "They'd just look up her file and let her die."
"But—"
"I'll take care of her," he said. He pressed a hand against Vasquez's scrawny, corded neck.
"He's searching for a pulse," Angelique thought.
Her eyes half closed, Vasquez breathed in a deep, shuddering sigh. Her eyelids fluttered, then closed altogether. Stoner scooped up her feeble body in his arms and carried her to the bed. He set her down gently beside her scrapbook.
"Is she—"
"She's sleeping," Stoner said. "She'll be all right."
"How do you know?"
He hesitated, his face set in an irritated frown. But then his expression eased and he almost smiled at Angelique. "You won't like my answer," he said softly.
"Why? What is it?"
"I'm helping her heart to rebuild itself with a form of nanotechnology."
"Nanotechnology?" Angelique gasped. "That's against the law. It's forbidden."
Patiently, Stoner replied, "They use nanotechnology on the moon, out in the asteroid belt. People couldn't survive off Earth without nanomachines."
"But it's evil," Angelique insisted. "It's been outlawed everywhere on Earth."
"I know," he said. "But outlawed or not, it can be very helpful. It's saving this old woman's life." Angelique looked from Stoner's hard, uncompromising face to Yolanda Vasquez, curled into a fetal position on the bed, sleeping peacefully. Stoner bent down and picked up the scrapbook.
"She doesn't want us to look at it," Angelique reminded him.
"That's what makes me curious about it," he said. Rick. Half a world away, General Carlos O'Hara awoke languidly. His bedroom was dark. Only the digital display of his bedside clock glowed in the shadows. It read 4:14 a.m. He turned over and pulled the deep, warm blanket over him. "I can get in another hour's sleep before the sun comes up," he told himself. O'Hara had been the commanding officer of the United Nations peacekeeping force for almost 2 years. In another 4 months, his tour of duty would be over, and he could retire with honor to his home in Buenos Aires, respected and wealthy enough to live in comfort for the rest of his life. "Leave the job to someone else," he told himself. "Let the Americans search for terrorists in these miserable little villages. They create more terrorists than they kill. Let the peacekeepers continue to monitor the drug trade. Keep the narcotics industry under control and everyone is happy, even the news media." He closed his eyes for another hour of pleasant sleep. But something was wrong. For some strange reason, O'Hara got the feeling that he was not alone in his bedroom. "Nonsense," he told himself. "Go to sleep." All the lights in the bedroom suddenly switched on. O'Hara opened his eyes and saw that a young man in the pale blue uniform of the peacekeepers was standing at the foot of his bed, his hair dark, his eyes steel gray, his expression grave. "What the hell are you doing here?" O'Hara demanded, his voice squeaking with shocked surprise. "Who are you? How did you get in here?"
"My name is Rick Stoner. I'm one of the Star Voyagers."
Sitting up in bed, O'Hara stared at his unexpected visitor.
"Star Voyager?"
Inadvertently, he clutched at his dark green pajama blouse.
"You don't know about us?"
Rick asked mildly.
"They haven't told you?"
O'Hara turned to the phone console on his night table and shouted,
"Phone! Security! Emergency!"
Rick shook his head a few centimeters. "The phone won't work, and I'm not going to harm you. I simply want some information." Despite being a general, Carlos O'Hara had never been very proficient with firearms. He kept an automatic pistol in the closet across the room, but it was unloaded. He'd had a dread of causing an accident ever since he'd become a new father, back when he was only a lowly lieutenant in the Argentinian army. Both his sons were in the peacekeepers now, and O'Hara had seen to it that they would continue to be promoted smoothly up the chain of command even after he'd retired. Stoner didn't move toward him by so much as a millimeter, but O'Hara felt the consternation in his mind ease away. In its place, he saw the Star Voyager's ship, a glowing sphere of energy orbiting above the Earth. He learned that this strange visitor's father had seen the President of the United States and even Archbishop Overmyer, head of the New Morality in North America. And he understood what Rick Stoner wanted of him. For more than an hour, Rick Stoner stood unmoving at the foot of his bed as Carlos O'Hara explained how the peacekeepers worked and why.
"So you see," he was saying, his voice hoarse from speaking, his throat parched, "originally the peacekeepers were founded on the best of principles, the highest of moral reasons."
"To prevent wars," Rick murmured. He glanced at the enameled water pitcher on the night table, and O'Hara gratefully poured himself a glass.
"To prevent," O'Hara took a swallow of the cooling water, "small wars. Wars between minor nations. Wars that the United Nations could agree to stopping."
"And to prevent the spread of weapons of mass destruction," Rick added.
"Yes, that too," said the general.
"Only wealthy nations could afford to try to build nuclear weapons. But biological weapons, nanotechnology weapons, digital programs that attack a nation's computer networks, these are easier to develop and more difficult to root out."
"So the peacekeepers try to find such developments and stop them?"
"Yes."
"And the narcotics trade?" O'Hara felt his insides jump. Yet he couldn't lie about it. Somehow this grim-faced young man was forcing him to admit the truth.
"We have reached an accommodation with the drug cartel," he admitted.
"An accommodation?"
"We are not allowed to stop the narcotics trade. Our mission is to keep it under control, to prevent it from harming the rich and